Go to Luke chapter 15. And hold chapter 15 of Luke and kind of put a mental placeholder on verse 11. That's where we're going to start. All right. And it says, starting at 11, and he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. A couple weeks ago, I was talking to one of my really, really close friends. I consider him a brother. And him and I talk like every day. Every morning on my way to work, that's like my pep talk. And I told him, him and I are a lot alike. And I said, man, I'm just trying to keep it in the middle of the road. I said, it's so many things that I can get into. Like at any given time of night, I can find something to get into. And typically the things that I could find to get into aren't any good. If there's one thing I can do, if I want to, is find some trouble. And he said, well, how are you? I said, man, I feel like I am running for my life. I said, is something going on over here? Is something I could get into over here? Man, I just want to get off of work and go to my room and read the word. Like, I'm trying. It's like stepping through a minefield, and it's like, oh, I don't want that over there. Oh, nope, I can't do that over there. And I said, I feel like I'm running for my life. And he said, Eric, you're not running for your life. You're running to your life. As soon as he said that, that was, like I said, a couple weeks ago. I knew that that was going to be the topic for today. So for topic and title lovers, you're not running for your life, you're running to your life. Excuse me. Go back to 13. It says, and I know we just read it, but, and not many days after, this is after his father gave him the portion that belonged to him. He said, not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. I have done that several times over, you know, just my teenage years, when I started working, and even, you know, into well into my 20s, and now I'm well into my 30s and about to be into my 40s. And each one of those decades, there were several times where I wasted my substance on riotous living. But I always had a plan B. Have you ever said, you know what, it's Thursday, I got enough to get this pair of shoes because I get paid Friday. Like, I'm going to be straight. Or, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go out because if I write the guy a check, the check won't clear until, because that's how my account is set up. Always had a plan B, because one thing I wasn't going to do is stop working. So Friday is coming eventually. It's going to be Friday somewhere, and I'm going to refill my account. The prodigal son, he had a plan B, okay? So he knew full well what he was spending his money on. And it wasn't an accident. No one had a gun to his head. But the thing was, when you spend all your money, you can always just go to work. Because when you don't work, when you got a little stash in the bank, but you're not working to bring anything in, it goes pretty quickly. And so what happened is, his money or his resources, they went fast because he wasn't working. But that's not a big deal because, see, the thing is, when he was in his father's house, he was used to doing some work. He went out in the fields, and if he didn't do the work himself, he was commanding the servants to do the work. So he wasn't a stranger to work, and he wasn't a stranger to doing what had to be done and knowing how to get it done, just in case he ran out of money, which he did. So his plan B was to start working somewhere. I can make it. My father didn't raise a punk. I can do this. I know how to get my hands dirty. So he said, when he had spent all, not a little bit, not some, but all of it, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. 15 says, and he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. See, I told you, he wasn't a punk. You know, he won't solve. He ran out of cash. So he was like, well, I'm going to work. I'm going to get my money back up. So it says he found some guy in the country where he was. And he's like, hey, I need to work. Like, I'm trying to eat. The guy said, all right, go feed the pigs. But a funny thing happened when he went out to feed the pigs. 16 says, and he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. So, plan B to work, verse 16 says that that didn't work. He tried to put himself to work, but at the end of 16 it says, no man gave unto him. So he had done the work. He fed the pigs. Not only did he feed the pigs, but when he saw what the pigs were eating, he wanted a portion, like he wanted some. So after he did that, and after, you know, he started salivating over what the pigs were eating, he was ready to get paid so he could go get something to eat. And it says, and no man gave unto him. God is always interested in our character and strength of character. And so, much like the prodigal son, I always had a plan B. But when you always can rely on a plan B, you don't build any character from that. You don't learn anything. When you never face the consequences of your actions fully, you don't learn anything from that. So not only, and this is the setup, because it's one thing to run out of money, right? But it's another thing to run out of money, and then there's a, not just a famine, but a mighty famine. I've never lived through a famine. I don't know what that's about, but I Googled it. And I Googled what happens during a famine. And I found some stuff that was interesting. Being that I've never gone through it, I had to read about it. And I read about, and it's stuff that you never think about because you've never been there. But in a famine, and what I was reading, this is day one. If there's a famine, everybody still has a little bit of a stash at home. Whether it's some dry goods in your pantry, whatever. We're going to be okay. Yeah, things are a little short right now, but we're going to be okay because we have rice, we have beans, and there's some leftovers in there, and we can kind of, you know, put something together. So you do that. Now, day two, it's less of the meats that we had left over, and it's more of the dry goods, the beans, the rice, you know, the things that won't spoil. By day three, if you weren't prepared for the famine, you're running out of stuff, you know, and you're starting to break open the applesauce and the Spam and the Vienna sausage, and the bread is still okay. So And by day four, you're like, all right, something's got to give. Typically, if you haven't prepared for a famine, by day four, things are getting serious. Five, you probably haven't eaten very much at all. And then it says, after that, and everybody is pretty much out of food, what they start to do is they start gathering together. And you'll go to your neighbor's house, and everybody's checking on one another to see who has something to eat. You know, maybe somebody was better prepared than I was, so I'm going to go next door, then I'm going to go here, I'm going to go across the street, and maybe, you know, we can get together and try to make something happen. After that, when that's over with, people start banding together to take things. They are going out of wherever the famine is, and they're stealing things. They are robbing. They are holding people at knife point. They're doing whatever they have to do to survive. If you had a pet, either it's become a meal, or someone else has made your pet a meal. After the pets are gone, people start to look at one another. Where you may have had a friend at one time, but you start to look at them a little bit different. The prodigal son was not only out of money, but if there was ever a worse time to be out of money, it's during a famine. And then the scripture says a mighty famine. But until God gets us to a point, man, now, what causes famine? No one has ever gotten the thought in their head like, yo, I'm going to get a group of people and I'm going to do something that's going to cause a famine. Like, no one does that. So famines, just like natural disasters, are acts of God. But it would be God to make sure that there was no option. There was no plan B, and you had to really, really come to grips with your actions and what you've done. Because once you come to grips with what you've done, you come to grips with who God is. 16, it was saying that he really wanted to eat what the pigs had, but nobody gave him anything. They took the food and gave it to the pigs before they gave it to him. But it's something about having to, you know, resort to that, and it's something about actually desiring to eat what the pigs are eating that will cause you to do some self-reflection. In 17, it says, and when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? But I imagine, you know, looking over that trough and actually seeing the pigs just go at it. And you want to get in, but you're a little bit afraid of the pigs, like you're not really sure, but you want to go in and have some. That's when he had his moment of clarity, like, this can't be life. Like, how did I get here? You ever been there and you just, the next day? Because sometimes when you get yourself into something, it doesn't really become clear until the next day, because maybe the state you were in the night before caused you to lose some of your memories. And so the next day you're trying to piece it all back together and you're like, oh man, first of all, where am I? And who am I with? You know, I know you've never been in that situation, but we'll talk later. At this point, he was like, you know what? There's got to be more than this. Like, I can't go out like this. What? And then he starts to really, really think. And now it says by this time he's in his right mind. So in his right mind, he says, I will arise and go to my father and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. So that's the plan. He's not yet at his father, but he's rehearsing what he's going to do and what he's going to say. This is plan C. The job didn't pan out like he thought. And it says, and he arose and came to his father, but when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight. Doesn't that look familiar? This is exactly how he played it out in his head. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. And it says, I've sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But stop there. When he was going through this in his head, look at 19. This is the rehearsal in his head. It says, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. Now, when he actually goes to carry out this, he never made it to the part where it says, make me one of thy hired servants. His father actually stopped him before he got there. He says, and here it is, it's playing out. You know, Father, I have sinned against heaven in 21 and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. And see, now this is the big finale where I say, please, you know, make me as one of thy hired servants. But he never got to that part when he was actually face to face with his father. His father interrupted him. And he says, but the father said to his servants. So the son is in the middle of talking in 21. In 22, the dad just starts talking to the servants, and it says, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. When you are in a place of desperation, whether you have, when you have exhausted all your resources and plan B hasn't worked out, and you finally figured out a way to get out of this thing, but when you're in that mode of desperation, and literally, it says he was going to die out there. So he not only was in a far away place, but he was already at the point of dying when he was far away. So it had to have been a pretty rough trip to make if you're already darn near starvation and you still got to travel back home. But when you're running from your life, that's a place of desperation. Running for your life is a place where you're just willing to take anything. Have you ever had a job that stunk and you're like, man, you're throwing your resume out there. You're at work, but you're sending your resume out at work on company time. Like, man, I just want something. Like, I don't care what it is. I'm going to take anything. You know, I'm going to shell peanuts for $2.13 an hour. I don't care. I just got to get out of here. That's where he was. But when you run for your life, you miss some things. When you operate out of a place of fear and desperation, you miss some things. Look at what happened in 22. It says, but the father said to the servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Now see how that differs from what the son expected to happen. That wasn't part of the plan. See, the plan was get back in good with my dad, because I know at the least I can be like one of the servants and start eating again. I can work and actually earn a living. And I am okay with that. But there's a difference in running for your life and running to your life. See, he's still running for his life. And when you're running for your life, you're willing to take anything. Even to the point where he forgot who he really was. He was willing to step down from who he was. He was willing to relinquish his position in his father's household because of his desperation. Because he was willing to take anything. You ever mess up so bad and be like, nah, man, I can't do what I did yesterday and then have the nerve to show up to church on Sunday? You ever do something and you're so ashamed that you want to read the word like you typically do every day, but you're like, come on, man, I can't read after I just, whatever. You're running for your life. And it's a difference in running for your life and running to your life. His father didn't want to hear anything that was coming out of his mouth because he was running for his life. He was speaking out of desperation. All that the father could think of was, my son is running to his life. My son has come back to be in his rightful place where he belongs. And see, when you run to your life and you understand what you're doing, that's when you get the robe. That's when you get the ring. That's when you get the shoes. You're not a servant. You're a son. It's a big difference. Another thing, and let me keep going. It says, after he got the robe, the ring, and the shoes, it says, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. So, look at 12. Back up. It says, and the younger said, this is what the prodigal son said. He said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. The father had two sons and divided his living and his livelihood to both of them. One half to the younger, one half to the older. But if you notice in 22, when the son came home, there's a ring, a robe, shoes, and a fatted calf. You can't exhaust God's resources. He said he split them in half. If you've got two apples and I take one and one of my sons takes one, your apples are gone. But see, when you're dealing with a man, you ain't got nothing once you take it. When you're dealing with God, he split it. It was gone. But when the son comes back, all of a sudden, the resources are here again. Because you got to know who you're dealing with. You're not dealing with a man. You're dealing with God. And that's why it's okay to come back and it be accepted in and to take your place and to understand that when you leave with a portion, but when you come back, the resources are unlimited in his house. He left with a portion. Do you realize how long does a portion last? I don't care if it's $1 million. If that's all you take with you, then that's all you have to spend. But when you come back to your father's house, all of a sudden, all of the resources, what happened? Where did the portion go? Why is there still meat here? Why is there still resources here when you divided everything to me and my older brother? But you still straight? We still good in here? Verse 24 says, for this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. I realized that maybe it's just me, but the first couple verses of this story, and it starts in verse 11. 11 and 12, this story is about 21 verses long. And only the first two are anything good. You know, the first two talks about, you know, there's a man, a father, and he has two sons, and there's an inheritance. And after the first two verses, the next nine things just go totally awry. Actually, the next, if I'm doing math right, maybe 19 or 20 verses, everything is going awry. I'm like, God, why was there so much time spent on all of this bad stuff? And God was like, man, you never learn anything when things are going good. You know, it's like, you know, if I'm poor and I come to you for financial advice and you start from a place of, hey, man, well, look, I'm going to explain to you exactly how to pick out the best leather to be installed in your private jet. And that sounds good. I'm like, oh, man, like, that's what's up. You got any pictures? But I'm still poor. You can't help me And I wouldn't learn anything from this if I didn't read the 20 or so odd verses of all the mistakes, because that's where I was at. I mean, maybe it's just me and I'm sorry, but not really. Maybe I just can identify with mistakes because that's where I'm at. That's what I can feel. That's what I've gone through. That's what I've experienced. And for you to tell me how great life is on a private jet doesn't really help me. What helps me is when you tell me what got you there and how you lost the jet and then you got another one and then, you know, the pitfalls and the traps you fell into. So I thank God for spending probably 90% of this story talking about the mistakes the prodigal son made. Only you live with yourself. You have your own thoughts. But when you make again moves out of desperation, and when you're doing things because you don't see any other way, when you are running for your life and you're willing to accept anything and everything just to get back above water again, take a second just to remember who you belong to and what, you know, when Jesus was talking to the disciples, and this is when he was about to be crucified. And this is where he was saying, like, let the greatest among you serve. Like, be as servants. He said the greatest should be as servants. And I know a lot of time we call ourselves, yeah, I'm a servant of the Lord. I'm a servant of the people. But it's a difference in between being a servant and being as a servant. See, Christ said the greatest, let them be as the least, as the servant. That's a big difference. We're not servants. But what it does say is that we are the head and not the tail. We are not like the head, not like a royal priesthood. It says we are a royal priesthood. But when it comes to servants, it says like a servant, as a servant. That's the mentality. But make no mistake about it, when you start thinking that you are a servant, then you'll be working. Then you won't be a son. You don't have a right to the... See, when Dad divided up the inheritance, the servants didn't get any. Why? Because they were servants. They're not in the family. They're not part of the... You're not part of a royal priesthood. You're a servant. That's what you do. You feed the pigs. You get a little bit of wages, and that's that. I say, God, what? All right, I'm not going to move out of desperation. I'm not going to run for my life anymore. I'm going to run to my life. How does that work? Like, how do you run to your life? How do you do that? And the simple answer God gave me was, man, it's like, Eric, all you have to do is accept and fully embrace what I said about you. So all those things, you know, in the Bible where it says who I really am and what I can do and what's possible with Christ and the lineage I belong to, not that that is easy, but that's why the word compares this life to a race. A race is not easy, you know. It does require work. To do well at it, to excel, requires some sweat. You know, there's muscle fatigue, all kinds of stuff. But he says, Eric, all you got to do is, and it was so simple, and I almost hate to say it because I just felt dumb that God had to tell me this. And he was like, man, read and pray and embrace what you know to be true about what I said about you and who I said you were. And I was like, man, I don't even really want to hear that, because that's just, I just feel dumb, you know? That's how, but that's how you run to your life. You read and you pray, but you do it all the time. Like the word says, pray without ceasing. Why? Because with all of these snares and traps and temptations out here, like, you've got to run towards your life. You've got not run for your life, but towards where you should be. The prodigal son, when he was out there in a far country, he was away from his life. But he had to run to his life. He tried to talk to dad, and dad said, whoa. You desperate. Relax. You know, you slow your breathing down, you know, because you're panting right now. Don't do this. Don't run for your life. You're not in danger. You're at home, man. You're home, man. Like, run. You ran to your life. When you put the robe on, that was your life. Remember? You know, before you left, this is what you were doing. You know, but how quickly we forget. You had the robe on. You had the shoes on. We were eating good. You remember? That's your life. That's where you belong. So no, you, if God doesn't say so, you don't have to drive the same car for 10 years. That's not what he said. You know? Lord, I just thank